Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're snacking on anything but tasty cake, you're making a huge Miss Cake. A fistful of chocolate-covered raisins? Miss Cake. A spoonful of peanut butter? Bigger Miss Cake. Or the worst Miss Cake of all, your kid's Halloween candy, and it's April. If it's not tasty cake, it's a Miss Cake, because nothing satisfies like a perfectly sweet butterscotch crimpet or rich and creamy chocolate peanut butter candy cake. Tasty cake. Accept no substitute.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. I'm flying solo on today's show, as we've got a special episode of the podcast today with an extended interview with songwriters Justin Tranter and Leland. You won't want to miss this, because the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit itunes.com/billboardpodcasts. All right, so first, before we get into it with Justin and Leland, normally we'd be chatting about the latest chart news, including Taylor Swift's ascent to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Look What You Made Me Do. However, we're going to pause on the chart news in today's show, just for today's show, only because we're dedicating the entire show to an interview. That said, make sure you tune in to the Chartbeat podcast with Gary Trust and Trevor Anderson later this week, where they'll be talking about Swift's newest number one and much more. So, if you want all your Taylor Swift news, wait for Chartbeat later this week. So, today on the show, we've got a lengthy interview with Justin Tranter and Leland. Now, Tranter has written hits like Justin Bieber's Billboard Hot 100 number one, Sorry, Imagine Dragons' Believer, Fall Out Boy's Centuries, and Selena Gomez's Bad Liar. Leland has written tunes like Selena Gomez's recent single, Fetish, Daya's Hideaway, Troye Sivan's Youth, and so on. Now, in my chat with Tranter and Leland, we talk about how exactly Fetish came to be and how the song actually got to Selena, what each writer brings to the table in a session with an artist, how Tranter reconnected with his old pal Lady Gaga to write some songs together, and how Leland says it feels really right for him to release his own music today instead of just a few years ago when he, as he says, wasn't as comfortable singing about boys. In addition to all of that, the guys also talk about everything from who they want to work with, including Madonna, Cher, Stevie Nicks, and The Killers, and how I spotted Justin Tranter a zillion years ago at a local LA restaurant when he was with his band Semi-Precious Weapons. It's a really amusing story, really. This whole interview is full of fun asides, jokey moments. It is super fascinating and absolutely super enjoyable. So I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I had conducting the interview. And it's absolutely such a fascinating conversation. So here's our interview with Justin Tranter and Leland.
I'll see how your tension builds. It's like looking in a mirror. You're touched like a happy pill, but still all we do is fear.
Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast. Justin Tranter and Leland, how are the both of you doing?
Fan-fucking-tastic.
Wonderful.
Now, you both walked in together, so yes. People are listening. You both walked in together. You have no entourage. There are no publicists with you. No. So we're going to ask you everything. But did you guys know each other before this? Have you met and worked together?
Yeah, we've never worked together, sadly, but we're going to fix that.
It is happening.
And that's Justin that you're hearing right now.
Hi, girl.
Hey, girl.
It's going to be difficult to tell our voices apart.
Actually, I know.
We both have the same
accent. I'll talk low.
Yeah, we both have the San Francisco accent, even though we're not from San Francisco.
Right, right.
But no, you haven't worked together.
No, we haven't worked together. We just have a lot of mutual friends. We've met a couple times. We hung out during the Pride March.
Yeah, we ran into each other at the Pride March and walked for a half a mile until I think veered off for a coffee break and then jumped back in.
Yeah. It was important. You were there still supporting. You just
of
had
course.
A coffee break. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk to you as much as possible, but there's a lot to cover in very little time because allegedly we're going to do this in a short amount of time, but we'll see if
I don't believe
both
it.
Run out the door. Well, I'm going to try. I've got blue cards and everything.
Wow. So fancy.
I can push back a session.
I think that's more important.
We'll cancel.
Getting paid is more important. I think firstly, we should address your...
You'll get paid from sessions.
Thank you for thinking we get
thank
paid.
You.
Well, we can talk about
and
that.
And thank you for thinking I have a publicist. Yeah. That's also very sweet.
You got to we got to amplify it for the kids listening here. There's a manager outside, three publicists.
Yes.
Yeah. An agent.
And a black car waiting downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, we should address your recent work with Selena Gomez because actually when we scheduled this interview... It hadn't been announced who wrote Selena's Fetish.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as it turns out, Leland co-wrote it.
Hey.
And coincidentally, Justin co-wrote Selena's single before that, Bad Liar, in addition to, of course, Hands to Myself. So, Leland.
And good for you. And good for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Come on. No, come on.
You've written a few hit songs. Jesus Christ.
Just the
you've also
topic.
Written Fall Out Boy's Centuries.
Yeah.
And Justin Bieber's Sorry. You've written a few things. But... Leland, since this is the first time that you've had a song with Selena, take us through how you actually got the opportunity to work with her and what that experience was like.
Sure. So I will first start by saying I'm such a massive fan of her and the music. So I was inspired to want to write for it after Revival, after the last run of songs, which I just thought were brilliant. And I was a fan of the writing and a fan of her tone and how her voice sounds recorded. I was just in. I was so sold. So I've just been working, I think, with the same people for the past 4 or 5 years. And I sort of organized 2 weeks where all we did was ideas for Selena.
Oh, cool.
Like you and who?
Myself and Gino Barletta and Chloe Angelides and Jonas Jayberg. And because I will say it's like there are some projects where I know that I'm important to this project. I'm a key part of this project. But then there are other projects where I'm like, listen, I'm just a fan. You don't need anything. You're up and running. You're killing it. So I just want to watch from afar and be inspired by the music. But I still was like, oh my gosh, the ultimate goal for me would be a Selena cut, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of banded together for 2 weeks and started coming up with a lot of different ideas. And at the end of the 2 weeks, we looked at everything. And Fetish, which was then called If I Were You, because we were nervous about it being too much, you know.
You could have been Fetish and then parenthetical, If I Were You.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was Selena who ended up changing it to Fetish, which I was really happy about.
Yeah.
So at that time, Fetish was this sort of the standout idea from those 2 weeks. And then I took it to the Futuristics, who came on and co-produced it and did an incredible job of taking it to the finish line. And from that point, we sent it to Aaron Bashuk, who had great feedback right away. And that was...
Who's Aaron Bashuk?
Aaron is the head A&R at Interscope.
I already know this person. Let me just knock on their door.
Average
person listening, they're like, how in the world do you get a song
of
with
course.
Selena Gomez?
Of course. Well, Aaron has a great relationship with the Futuristics.
Okay.
And I had met Aaron... over the past 6 months because he'd hung out with us during the last Troy album.
Right.
We'd become friends through that. And I was like, listen, you know, the first thing I send him, I just want to go in with fire.
Yeah. All in.
And so thankfully we had good feedback right away. And he said, you know, just trust me on this. It's going to be a minute, but just like hang on. So for me, I sort of put that song out of my mind, that it even existed. And I had to sort of take the role of reassuring some of the other writers and some of the other writers' publishers, saying, do not send this song to anyone. Do not pitch this song. Forget about the song.
And you had given it to Selena's A&R person,
mm-hmm.
And said, she is the only person getting this song. We have not sent it to anyone else.
No one ever heard the song except for him and Selena.
And this was like, what, last year or something?
This was last March.
So not
last March, last April.
March 2016?
A year and a half ago, yeah.
Yes.
Wow. And is that sort of normal with like this kind of thing?
I don't really know. I mean,
Kemi, we wrote Bad Liar in July of 2016. So after, mm-hmm. after that. And
so like almost almost a year basically before something comes out.
You can sometimes a song can come out in a month if you're like really close to the project and mm-hmm. the person's ready to release.
Right.
Sometimes it can take 3 years, you know. It's just like you never know. And luckily, if the song isn't trendy, production-wise,
right?
Because like trendy top line is kind of hard to do, like unless you're like talking about booty songs mm-hmm. in 2012.
And when you say top line, describe what that means.
Oh, okay, so it's actually a really gross term, but we all say it because it's just like
it helps to just delineate.
It's lingo,
yeah.
But it means like whatever the singer is singing. So it comes from the era of hip hop and dance music. When like a lot of writers were just writing to a completely finished track, so the track was done, and you were just putting something on top of it.
The music's all done, and you're just like putting some lyrics on top.
You're putting the vocal and the melody on top of it, the lyric and melody. So it's mm-hmm. like that's what top line became. But then everyone calls us like top liners and not songwriters, which is also like weird. Like, no, it's the fucking song,
right? Everybody, exactly. And the role now goes beyond. I mean, this is a whole other discussion that I do love talking about, but. The role has gone so far beyond just songwriting.
Yeah.
We are also essentially producers in a sense when you look at the overall project. I know you did that with Selena, and I've done that with projects I've been involved in where it's like we're not just writing the lyric and melody. We are doing video ideas and everything associated with the project.
So when you gave the song to Selena's A&R person and you basically had the Futuristics produce a demo...
So Jonas Jayberg did the I would say a lot of the production. He produced the very first version, and then Futuristics came on and just co-produced it, and just I would say made it more Selena, and did an incredible, incredible job.
And one of the four of you songwriters like sang like on that demo.
Chloe sang the demo.
Okay, and mm-hmm. then because we've if you're listening to this, you probably go to YouTube. You can find all sorts of demos of your favorite mm-hmm. songs. Like, I found a bunch of Esther Dean demos of Rihanna tracks. I'm like, that's amazing.
Esther Dean is, like, the queen of queens.
I was so excited when I saw Pitch Perfect, the first Pitch Perfect movie, and they have that, the sort of sing-off karaoke mm-hmm. bit. Have you both seen Pitch Perfect? This is in the first one, and they're having that battle at the beginning. And it's the songs about sex, and they have to like vamp, and they're having a moment, and then suddenly Esther Dean busts out, and she's like, "Nah, nah, nah, come
she
on!"
Does her own song.
I'm
yeah.
like, incredible. I'm in the theater going, "She's singing her own song. That's her. She's having her moment. She's getting to sing her own
full
goddamn
circle.
Song."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, "She's in a movie, and she's the star, and she gets to sing the song that you know from Rihanna." Anyway, so I just thought it was
shouting
cool.
in the theater.
I just thought it was nice that like a songwriter was like getting this like moment to shine with
yeah.
the song
yeah,
that
really
she
beautiful.
Wrote, which was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, Selena got it. Maybe Rihanna someday.
Maybe.
Maybe, I don't know. You could be working with her right now. That smile on your face is telling me everything. And then when did you actually hear that she was like, yes, it's a go, we're going to do this?
So, you know, throughout the process, Aaron was just like, just trust me. It's all good. So I think Aaron and I talked about that song maybe four times between March and December. And then in December, he said, she's cutting it. Can I have the lyrics? And that's always a good sign when you're asked to send the lyrics over.
Just to make sure that they didn't get them wrong?
She has them. I don't think, anyone had had them at that point. And then she cut the song and sounded amazing. And then I would say a few months later, we found out about Gucci Mane being on the song. And then a month later, that rumors of a video being shot... you know, but you don't get screenshots or pictures of a video, so you just
like why
of,
would you? You just wrote
right.
the song. Like, why would
right,
you necessarily
right, right.
find out about the video?
For me, I've just completely come to terms with it's out of my hands.
Yeah,
and I'm at that point, I've written so many other songs between March and December. My focus is on other projects. So it was just a pleasant surprise. And then I heard Bad Liar, which I loved, and thought that was such an amazing opening song for this era.
Yeah.
And then did not know Fetish was the next single until the end of the music video for Bad Liar, when when Queen of Pop Sabrina Carpenter sent me a screenshot and a text of the
I could have told you. I'm sorry, I should have texted you. I knew it was the second single.
See, now it's good that you guys know each other in a more you know, in a more friendly fashion.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, I love being surprised. I had a good feeling about the song, so I knew it was coming. I just didn't know when. And it's the rollout has been so incredible, and how they just went from Bad Liar to Fetish was also really cool.
It I thought it was going to be like a sequel at the end of Bad Liar. I was just like, what happens now?
Yeah.
What happens? How? Ooh, where? Lesbian overtones.
And undertones.
And undertones. Just tones.
Yeah, lesbian tones.
Mm-hmm. Lesbian tones and highlights.
That sounds like our a cappella group.
Well, I do call myself a lesbian, though, but that's a whole other story.
You're a lesbian impersonator.
I am a lesbian impersonator, exactly.
When have you... Okay, so have you actually heard directly from Selena herself?
Yeah, well, at dinner through through Aaron.
So you actually had dinner with her and she...
We didn't have dinner. I had dinner with Aaron and the writers, I think the day of the release. And we just talked, and she sent all of us a very sweet message.
So you got a message from her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is amazing.
It's wonderful. I'm so grateful to be a part of it. I again, am just like in awe of the music that she's been putting out. I feel really grateful to be a part of, I think, some of the best like moments right now for her musically.
She's having like the last album and this project.
It's incredible.
I think it's so interesting what she is doing with the music and the imagery and the sound. It's just sort of taking her from here, and just she's maturing and graduating to a whole other place over here. It's just really cool. And I think it's just sonically, imagery, the whole shebang is like really, really cool.
She's amazing job, Justin.
I cannot take credit.
It's very artistically driven, though, which is great. And I know she's at the helm with those ideas.
Yeah,
and
her taste is like impeccable. She's like the ultimate. And her and Aaron Bashuk make like this dream team, like the A&R artist dream team of like the coolest taste, wanting to push every boundary possible, not being afraid to push boundaries. Because, I mean, it is, at the end of the day, she's an artist that's, you know, a lot of her success has been based on pop radio. And pop radio has trends, you know. It's a very, it's not a listener-driven format. Obviously, it's, you know, but it's getting cooler and cooler. And iHeart, with all of their amazing rebranding, and Jon Ivey and Tom Pullman and all these guys, they want pop radio to be just as exciting as the music you can find online.
Right.
And so it's really cool to see someone like Selena Gomez, a Disney alum, in this really classy, slow, like mature way, push all, like I think Selena pushes more boundaries on pop radio than almost anybody.
I agree.
So you kind of answered this question already, Leland, but I was curious, and I think a lot of people always ask this question very sort of like snarkily on the internets, when they see songwriting credits for a song and there's 8-9 people. So for this particular track, there are 8 songwriters, 4 of which you already named, 4 of you, the 4 songwriters who actually worked on the track together that wrote the music and the lyrics for the song. I'm assuming, and then Selena's on here, so that's 5. She probably changed some lyrics.
She did.
Adjusted it for herself.
Yes.
And then there are, well...
Three other
people. I'm assuming 2 of those are the producers.
The Futuristics.
And then who's the...
Gucci Mane.
Oh, well, there you go. See, for pop songs like this, when it's assembled in this way, and I say assembled, I don't mean that in sort of like, oh, it's
of
a
menu.
You know, it's just like, that's how it works when you have a songwriting team. Like, Justin, you and Julia Michaels often work together, so immediately that's 2 people.
Right.
And when the producers come on, that could be anywhere between 1, 2, 3 people, depending on if it's a Swedish production team. Who knows how many people are in that
and
room?
And depending on the artist. And if there's a feature.
Or, if it's Imagine Dragons, there's immediately 4 people.
Right.
And you co-wrote Believer with Imagine Dragons.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to say about it too is that it's, yeah, actually I got like I don't really get in arguments on the internet. Cause queens don't argue, but I get in a discussion yesterday. And I was like, well, but you also have to understand about this topic of all these different writers and how can it be honest and real if it's all these people. And I said, well, you know, it's, you also have to look at it too, because the money in the record business is shrinking. The money in the music business is growing and growing. And
right,
the record business
is shrinking.
The
record labels, yeah.
That now, like, if things were in the current paradigm, back in the day, every band member would have publishing, even if it was just the lead singer who, like, wrote the main chords and the lyric and melody. He, you know, he, back in the day, just the lead singer would have all the writing credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the other band members would get writing credit for the parts that they played that might have been specific enough to garner writing credit. The producers are getting publishing, and it's because there's no money.
Right.
So we're all sharing so that people can still keep making music.
We're all trying to splice up that songwriting so we can all make a little bit of money, you know, because we're not making anything from royalties of selling music.
Of course. Right. And the producer, the sound of the track has become so integral to a song that the producers are in the room from the beginning of the songwriting mm-hmm. process for mm-hmm. the majority of songwriting now. Mm-hmm. So it's a different thing where it's like, you're not just writing the song alone and bringing it in, because it's so much of the song is based around how the production sounds. So everyone's getting writing credit. So it's like, you know, you look at certain things back in the day, if it was made right now, the producer would get writing credit. The guitar player might get writing credit. All these different people would get writing credit because, one, they probably deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And two, that's the only way they're going to make money.
Correct. And it is a true collaboration now.
Yeah.
I mean, that song was a true collaboration.
Yeah.
I mentioned Imagine Dragons a second ago.
Yes.
You co-wrote Believer.
Yes.
And earlier this year, I spoke to the band for this podcast.
Amazing.
And their lead singer, Dan Reynolds, had a really wonderful thing to say about writing with you. And I will read you what he said.
Oh, how she? Okay.
He said, when we got in the room, meaning you and him, I said, look, this is the first time that I've written with someone else, and I feel I have to write my own lyrics, or I feel weird about it. And I just wanted to get that out of the way. And he said, and Justin was like, look, I am here to help you be the best version of you. And he said, that was really important to me. And Justin was just such an incredible sounding board and brought so much to the table. They were just such a rad team to work with, meaning you and
Matt Mann and Robin.
The Swedish folks.
Yeah.
So can you talk about how you actually collaborate with an artist and what the typical, if there is a typical situation, is like when you're working with an artist, you know, trying to write a song together, and maybe you haven't worked with them before. You obviously knew Dan because you guys have been friends.
Well, we had known his wife, but I had never met him.
Okay.
So the first day we met was in the studio.
You were pre-approved though.
I was pre-approved by his wife, who is the greatest rock star of all time, in my opinion, and I'm not exaggerating. Anyway, so my favorite thing to do is, like, you walk into the room and it's like you figure out what the room needs. Right, what the collaborators need. And I feel so grateful to come into my career as a pop songwriter after having 10 years in my band, like, wearing and doing and singing and saying, and it was all my vision. And of course, collaborated musically with my band members, but lyrically and visually, it was all, I literally called my band members and said, this is the name of the band and you're in it. Like, it was like this, you know, so I had that whole rock star, pop star ego trip for 10 years. And so now I'm like really ready to just help other people tell their stories and help other people be, like Dan said, the best versions of themselves. So kind of walk into the room, and whether it's a co-writer or whether it's an artist or whether it's the producer, kind of see where I can, like, fill in the gap. Because at this point in my life, like, she's old. And, like, I don't really have,
I'm like, if you're old, then I'm dead. But cool. All right. Thanks.
I don't really have that, like, when I was 20, right? Or 25 or even 29, there's, like, songs that I had to write. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like there's something that I had to say or I was gonna fucking die. I don't have that anymore. And I don't think that makes me a less of an artist. I think it just makes me a different kind of artist.
Of course. Well, that's a sense of awareness, which is so important, especially when going into rooms.
Yeah. And so I love going in there and being like, okay, so I could, you know, whether Dan said it or I've sensed it or whatever the situation is with each different artist, you kind of sense, like with Julia, right? The first day I met Julia Michaels, even though she wasn't being an artist yet, it was just writing for herself. It's a very long, hysterical, fabulous story, but it was very clear, like, she needed to, like, talk about her life and that she was very anxious to work with new people. And so I was just like, all right, cool. Like, I was, like, 4 months into this pop writing circuit of where you, like, meet new people every day. And it was, like, an amazing thing of, like, okay, I can totally let this girl lead the way. I can I can just elevate the whole situation, and I, of course, write my ass off. But like, you know, I don't know. So I love that feeling of figuring out what the room needs and being the one that can do it.
Some days you get to go in and you get to contribute a lot or take the lead on the session, steer the ship, everything. And then some days you're just filling in gaps.
Yep.
You are simply good energy in the room. And it's, I think that's a really great balance.
Can you both, when you write with someone, are you like, oh, well, let me jump on a piano over here, or let me play a guitar, or sometimes, let me just think of some lyrics? Is it just like, I can kind of do everything?
It's whatever the room calls for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, I know, like, I think everyone has their strengths, but sometimes, like with Dan Reynolds is a great example, like, I know my strengths are lyrics for the most part. And like big dramatic melodies, like "You Remember Me" first, then like big drama. But like you sometimes see, like with Dan, like he really, especially in the verses, like it needed to be the details of his life and only his life. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I'm not gonna get in there and be like, oh, here's a cool rhyme for your life. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I would just like kill the vibe.
Totally inappropriate.
So it was, even though you know your strengths, if you want to win, and not even win, if you want to not, I mean, win in the sense of money, fuck that. If you want to win creatively, it's like, okay, maybe I do just write the chords on the piano today because I can do that. Or maybe it's just like pushing the melody to make it better. Or, you know, it's like, it's kind of just...
Depends on the situation.
Well, the last thing
you want is to force yourself into a song where it's not necessary. Because then you're burning bridges, you're killing the vibe of the room.
I mean, a lot of people do that too.
And it's not... Yes. And it is exhausting. And I've sat in rooms where I'm with the artist and maybe a couple other writers, and I'm like, the artist is here telling us what he or she wants, and we're going against that.
That's exactly what we had someone in at this table last week, and we were asking them, you know, oh, what's it like to collaborate, you know, when you're writing songs? And they were like, well, I've had those situations where I'll go in and say, well, here's what I'm thinking. And they're like, oh, that's great, how about this? And she's like, we're talking about my life,
right?
And this is what I'm and so why? And she's like, yeah, so you don't work with those people anymore, and you move on.
Yeah. You know, I love to also too just talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love to talk in general, but I love to talk to the artist or to the co-writer, and you just find the song in there. If they don't already have the song, if they're not like, this is what I need to talk about today, find the song in their life. Because then, whether it's an artist or your co-writer, they're going to feel way more in touch with it, and way more like it's theirs, and like, you know, everyone's gonna take it more seriously, even if it's fun. Like Kink by the Ocean, I'd worked with Joe for a week, and we were kind of like all taking ourselves too seriously, and Julia was like, I can't do this project, it's not making sense for me, so she left. And the next day I went in and I was like, I think we need to be fun. Like, you're a fun guy. Like, you're fun and you're fucking hot. Like, we should, like, write a song that's really... Like,
let's play up to, like, the fun hotness.
Like, that's who he is. Like, of course he's a multi-dimensional human who has lots of things to offer. But in that moment, I was like, let's just go where you are. And
Joe, by the way, needed that, I think.
Well, thank you. And
so, I mean, and it worked because it was such a huge hit, and it was the right look, the right image, and the right vibe for what he and I think the rest of that band needed, because that band is like a fun, like freewheeling band.
I mean, the bass player was in my band.
I was with a couple of friends yesterday, and I forget how it was brought up, but we were talking about Joe in the Charlie video for Boys, and then that went into DNCE. We were like, DNCE is here to stay. They are so good. The vision is so smart. It's fun. It's great songwriting. It's just, it's good. It doesn't.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But it's like, so the point being, like, it's just about getting that honesty, even if the honesty is Cake by the fucking Ocean, which is ridiculous. That, in that moment, that was like the way to get to Joe's core. And like, it, obviously, you see it works. And so to me, that's like the best part of what we do.
I want to ask you, Leland, about how you recently released your single Mattress.
Yes.
Was it always the goal to be both like a songwriter and then like an artist, the singer?
You know, I would say it's changed over the past couple years. 2 years ago, I wanted to do the artist thing. I've always felt like an artist. I mean, I started music because I was performing and singing original songs on the Mississippi Gulf Coast at different casinos up and down the coast.
Shut up. Not a casino queen.
Yes. Full casino queen. And then that sort of, I realized that I did not know who I was as an artist. And I actually realized the other day when I did an interview with Out, they premiered the song, and he asked me why I wanted to do my Leland artist project now. And it's because I realized I am completely comfortable with myself. And so it was 2 years ago, I was not there yet. 3 years ago, I wasn't there yet. It could be a year ago that I necessarily just wasn't there to sing about boys, say exactly what I wanted to say, sing the lyrics comfortably. And so I definitely know that 4 years ago, I was not in a place where I was comfortable in saying those things. So it feels right now. And it also feels right because the resources are there, the friendships are there, and the desperation isn't there. You know, 2 years ago, I felt like, I just didn't necessarily have the resources, and I felt desperate to become an artist. And I hit a wall, I guess, where I was like, this doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. And I shifted my focus and energy to writing for other people, and doors flew open. And now, approaching my artist project this time, it feels really not easy, but it feels right. Mm-hmm. It feels like beautiful, and the doors that are opening and the way that it's being received, and everyone is so receptive, and the song is real to me, and I'm not having to say, oh, it's about a girl or it's about whatever. It's true to me, you know? So yeah, now it feels like the right time, and I never in a million years would have imagined Out premiering a song of mine and having the headline be queer songwriter, artist, Leland, you know, all of that just feels really nice and yeah, comfortable.
Justin, I found that you released your own track earlier this year.
Did I?
You released your own single.
No, I didn't.
Forever, from the Lego Batman movie.
I mean, we can't really call that a my own single, but yes.
Sure. Well, it's your own song.
Yes.
But you don't have, there's not a whole lot of wealth of material that's just under your name. I mean, Obviously there's Semi-Precious Weapons.
Yeah.
But there's not a whole lot of stuff that's just you.
No.
Is that on purpose? Like, did you want to just do your own, like, is a solo album from you coming at some point?
Oh, God, no.
No?
I'd rather die.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I just feel like that time of my life is done. I mean, obviously, never say never. I could honestly see myself like...
Is it because you can, like, retire right now from all the money you've made in the past 2 years?
No. I've got a lot of family members to take care of. We're just...
So many babies. So many cities.
But, no, I just... I feel like, I said it before, like, the need to tell my story isn't there anymore.
Okay.
You know, obviously, I could see, like if I write, like, all the songs to a TV show or something, like some really weird TV show, and then, like, there's an album with that or something. But I couldn't see myself doing a traditional single album.
Radio promo.
You are totally Billy. You're totally Billy Joeling us right now.
What does that mean?
Well, because Billy Joel's last pop album was The River of Dreams, I think, in, like, 93.
Okay, wow. I didn't even know that.
Since then, all he's done is do concerts. He did a classical album.
Yeah.
And he's done some live albums. But he's done no new pop material since, like, 93.
Crazy.
And he's just like...
He doesn't want to.
Well,
yeah. Do what you want to do. And I think there's
he doesn't want to. A
power that comes with that. I think that's great.
Yeah. And it's just like... It's... It doesn't feel necessary. And, like, there was so much time in my life where it felt so necessary. And also, too, like, seeing... All the amazing, famous people I get to work with, they all love making art and they all love being creative, but no one likes being famous. So, like, when you are that close to it and you're like, well, no one actually... Some people get addicted to it.
Right.
But no one actually likes it, you know? So, there's no need.
Okay.
Yeah.
You get to do all the... In your position, you get to do... all those things of being a performer, recording artist, except without the, oh, you're being spotted in Ralph's. And, like, it's like, no, I can go to shows. I can get into all sorts of cool places.
Yeah.
I can get to write songs. I get to perform.
Yeah.
I get to hang out with cool, fun people.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be, like, accosted by paparazzi somewhere.
No, and also, too, a huge part of what I do is based in, like, activism and, to me, I feel like there are people that have similar stories that I could tell, but that have been even more marginalized and that have their lives have been way harder. And I would rather elevate them to tell their stories at this point in my life. Because, you know, there's like three Sonny Precious Weapons albums that everyone can listen to. You know, like...
If they want to hear Justin, they can go back.
They can go back, yeah. You know, an Aviation High is probably the closest thing to, like, my pop career if they really want Justin the pop star. Like, there is that moment. But, you know, like, one of the artists signed to my label is a woman named Shea Diamond, who's a black trans woman who was incarcerated for like, 10 years.
I think Shea might have done, like, she might be in our office in New York today.
She is.
I think doing, like a live office performance. Yeah. Sorry.
No, yeah. But so, you know, I'd rather spend that energy on letting her... tell her story, you know, or this kid West Period that I just signed. We're putting his single out next week. He's like a mixed race kid from the suburbs, and like his parents both come from these completely different backgrounds, and he has all these awesome stories to tell, and he writes and produces alone. And it's like, at this moment in my life, I would rather elevate those people to tell their stories.
I've kept you both here way too long.
Well, quick sidebar.
I'm not throwing you out, but
okay,
go ahead.
I was at Sayers Club, Justin, when you performed Aviation High for the very first time.
Wow.
We didn't know each other. Neither
Shut
of us were writing pop songs.
Up.
But I was at that show. I think I have pictures. I think if you scroll deep into my Instagram, there is a picture from that show.
No way.
I don't know why I was there or who I was there with.
Tiniest world.
Yeah. But I remember that show and I remember that song very vividly.
Wow, amazing.
Mm. Well, I wasn't there.
Sorry.
But
you missed out.
You once passed me at El Cholo in Santa Monica.
What was I wearing?
Oh, something over the top. This was Semi Precious Weapons days.
Yes!
And we were sitting there in a booth having dinner. And I'm like...
Just 8 feet tall from the heels.
And I was like, I think that was the singer from that band, Semi Precious. They were in Lady Gaga's video. For telephone, and everyone at my table was like, who? I'm like, the guy with the blonde hair, and he was in heels and boots, and I think he had fishnets. How could you not?
Do you know what, actually, too?
It might have been you and the whole band.
Yeah,
sure.
I think the whole band. And Cole, the bass player, threw up in that El Cholo that day.
Oh, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. It couldn't have been the food.
It wasn't the food. No, it was from the obscene amount of drinking that we did before we even got to El Cholo.
I don't know how he drinks anything because he has abs and like.
Well, the abs are literally tattooed on, though.
They're tattooed on.
It's like in a funny way. Like he has tattoo abs.
Yes, but he also has a great body. So
he is amazing. Yeah,
he works out a little bit. So let's do it. Let's do this kind of quickly.
Okay.
Leland, who is on your wish list of people that you like to write songs with? And it could be another. It could be another songwriter. Could be Justin.
Of course.
Could be or could be just an artist that you love.
I want to work with Taylor Swift. I want to work with Florence and the Machine. I want to work with The Killers. I want to write a musical. I just finished scoring a film that was on my bucket list, so that'll come out next year.
Called Casino Queens.
called Casino Queens. No, called Sierra Burgess is a Loser with Shannon Purser from Stranger Things.
Mm, cool.
Troy, Ali X, myself, and Bram wrote a song she sings in the movie, and then Bram and myself scored the movie. So it'll be, in theaters
so cool.
next year. And then myself and Ali X have, as of right now, every song on the soundtrack.
Wow.
It's fun. But yeah, I want to work with those artists. I just want to work with bands that I love. I grew up listening to bands and great pop people. And also just not pop. I want to work on all sorts of things. So I'm just sort of figuring all that out. You know, I think Justin and I are in a similar place where I'm not doing the two session a day, like hustle
oh,
anymore.
I still am.
Are you doing incredible? Yeah. I for me, like just like for mental health, I have to like focus on a few things at a time that I am super passionate about and that I love. So for me right now, that's Troy, Sivan, and Daya and like myself, I guess.
By the way, Troy, Daya, and Ali X have all been on the podcast.
I
as well.
Love
Ali X
my
is just
queens,
on a few weeks ago.
All of my queens.
Same question, Justin. Like, who is on your wish list that you haven't worked with yet? That obviously, there's probably people that you've worked with that we don't know about that we can't talk about.
Totally.
Like, you know, you could have worked with Madonna in the past few months.
I wish.
You can't tell me. So Madonna's on your wish list.
I mean, I would love that. Why
That's
the hell
we
not?
Work with together.
Yeah, done.
Yeah, let's make that happen.
I would mean, like, Beyonce is a big thing for
How
me.
How does one even get into
I don't
you
Beyonce
are in the right
circle.
Place for it to happen?
I don't know. I mean, Big John, the CEO of Warner Chappell, is very involved in her creative life. But, you know, she likes, like, really, like, the coolest of the cool.
Well, yeah.
But I think, like, when you, like, I've had enough, like, big down the middle pop hits that I might not be cool enough for her anymore.
You're not there's edgy outside of the
there's yeah. always a way though. I have no doubt.
But yeah, so Beyonce and then Stevie Nicks is the real the real dream.
Can
let's Tina Turner.
Mm. Okay. Okay. So,
Cher.
The Stevie yeah. song on Lana's album is it's gorgeous.
Did Stevie write it?
I don't know. Actually.
I don't know.
But you should definitely try to make that happen.
Well, you know how like Jack White has done like a couple albums with like
Loretta Lynn.
Exactly. That's like I would love to have that moment with like Stevie. Or I've worked a lot with Courtney Love.
She interviewed you for something
for Out Magazine. Yes. Yeah. You know, like I there's something about. Women who have actually lived a life that are so inspiring to me that I would love to like be able to help them tell that story and not shy away from the amazing life they've lived and their age. And
it's funny, on my list I had Madonna, Janet,
of course.
I have divas of a certain era.
Yeah,
Celine. That would be awesome.
It'd be amazing.
Incredible.
Well, you know, Gwen was always a huge one, and I got to do an entire album with her. So that was like, that was a big weight off of my career-driven shoulders.
Do pop stars get precious about who else you work with?
I mean, I think that people, I've heard of that happening to other people. I've witnessed it happen before I was a pop writer. I've witnessed some people not being too happy. But I think in this new era, I think that that's kind of, over.
Yeah.
I feel like it is too. You know, everyone, I think it just comes down to everyone has to pay bills.
Yeah.
And everyone wants make to just music. Make music and make a living making music.
The LA scene is really, the LA pop scene is really amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's really healthy and it's really honest. And it's, there's, you know, if there's like competition, it's a very healthy competition. To me, it's much when I was in a rock band in New York, which was supposed to be a great, like scene for bands, it was awful and no one talked to us and everyone was straight and they hated us because we were fun and over the top, even though the guys in my band play their instruments way better than all those other losers. But you know, anyway, but the scene here is really beautiful, and the artists that are working with co-writers, they become a real part of it. You know, they become a they're a part of our pop scene too. And
they introduce you to other artists.
Yeah.
I feel like every artist I work with has introduced me to another artist, saying you have to, like telling 100%. The artist you have to work with Brett.
Yeah.
You know, so that I have not experienced, but I'm not the artist on the other side.
Yeah.
But I've even seen just from like releasing Mattress, like the support from
the artist
that I've worked with has been not unexpected, but just a really nice surprise, and everyone supports everyone.
Yeah.
So I haven't experienced that personally.
Yeah. This might be a stupid question, but Justin, have you toured with Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're still friends with Gaga.
Yeah.
Have you ever written with her?
I have.
What, and I just didn't know that, and it's been on an album, and I'm an idiot?
No, it hasn't come out.
Oh, okay. But you worked on something, and it's just in the vaults somewhere.
Yeah. And it was pretty awesome, too, because it was a very full circle moment for us, because, you know, she was a huge fan of our band. That's how I ever met her, is because she was a huge fan, and we had heard that there was this girl named Gaga who was also like a high level music school nerd who was putting on this insane visual.
Very
as well.
Visual.
And so it's like, oh, okay. And like, it was actually someone at Columbia was talking to both of us, my band, and talking to her about maybe signing us a million years ago. And they asked her who, like, what music she loved. And she's like, oh, my favorite band in the whole world is a band called Standing Precious Weapons. And so someone at Columbia told us about her. And so we had her open for us because she was a fan.
Incredible.
Lady Gaga once opened for you.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was just, she was a fan of ours. So we had her open for us. And then we obviously thought she was dope. And then she becomes the biggest star in the world. And then we go and open for her. And then, of course, we stay friendly, but like we, you know, we're both very busy.
You're busy people,
and so we don't really. And then all this stuff happens for me, and I get a text from a number I don't have, because obviously she has to change her number a lot because people are creepy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Yes, I can't believe this! Someone just told me all that you wrote all these fucking songs. Oh my god! Oh my god!" And I was like,
"You're like, who is this? New
like,
phone? Who dis?
Girl, it's Steph." And I was like, "What the fuck?" And so then it was just really like. And so then we go and work, and then she was like, "Oh my god, to see you!" You know, the day after we worked, she texted me like, "To see you do your thing was so amazing." You know, because it was me and Julia with her, and like to see her, for her to see me in my new element where I feel really confident and really comfortable. I don't know. It was just a really, It was a really full circle moment.
Incredible.
Wow. It's good to surround yourself with nice artists, too, because it seems like, and then we'll stop. It seems like, sorry, it seems, I mean, I have not spoken to Gaga, but the other host of this podcast, who is not here right now, we had Gaga on a couple weeks ago on the show. I mean, we did a phoner with her, and she was lovely. Yeah. Gaga has always come across as just a lovely, nice, warm, well-meaning person. We've had Selena on the show, and I've talked to Selena in person, and I'm like, unless this is an incredible act and you're an actress who's like, you know, bar to none, like, you are like super nice.
Yeah.
Troy is incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, so sweet.
The best.
And I'm like, you know, it probably helps when you work with like good people and you feel like it's like a good, warm, creative environment. I'm sure you probably worked with people that are not probably the nicest people in the world, but it probably helps a little bit when you have that connection, you know?
I've been pretty lucky. Almost everyone I've worked with has been really nice. And if there is weirdness, it's because somebody's
insecure. They're having a bad day.
Exactly. Or because, like,
and I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I don't got time for that.
I sense that insecurity. I just want, like, come here. Let's do seven sessions.
Let's hug it out.
And on the seventh session, we're going to get a great song. And we can do this. You know, like, I love that. To me, I love that challenge, you know? Yeah. Now with other just pop writers, I do not have time for
There's
that.
There's no patience.
If we're not gonna like be friendly and like just right. be good and like really collaborate mm-hmm. on the first go, no girl, I got a dog at home.
Right.
I'm gonna
and you know who you work well with.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this has been lovely. This has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time. I kept you way longer than I anticipated.
It's okay. It still feels so short.
So short.
Yeah. Well, great. Let's just keep on stuck. I'm kidding. No, you have to go make money. Forever. You have like a writing session. Are you allowed to say, like, is it with someone that we've heard, Justin?
Today my session is with this new amazing artist called Steph James, or Stephen James.
I've heard things.
Oh my God, he's amazing. He's on Republic. His voice is like, there's some like videos of him online singing stuff. He's like 19. He looks like if James Dean was like a tattooed vampire.
Oh, okay. I was like, ooh, I'm really intrigued. Oh, this is interesting.
Like, I'm right here.
No, he's like, no, he's like, his voice is gorgeous. His soul is gorgeous. He's gorgeous. It's like sort of like really dark R&B pop music, but also very dramatic. He's amazing.
Wow.
He's amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Cool.
What are you doing today?
Yeah. What you doing?
I'm writing with Troy today.
Oh, amazing. So, mm-hmm. Send my love.
I will, of course.
I love his new blonde hair I saw on the Instagrams.
Everything. It's incredible. Yeah.
Are you going to go blonde too soon?
You know what? I don't think that's my journey right now. I don't want to steal the spotlight from Troy.
Right.
So I'm going to let him have his
It's really
moment.
About him. Yeah. He's the star.
It is.
You should do it. I mean, I was blonde. I was platinum for like 10 years, and it is a very freeing. It is a very freeing experience.
Know, before he did it, he was telling me to do it. So I think I think at some point he was like, fine, if you're not going to do it, I'll do it. No. But I think for this next chapter for him, he is excited to
blondes have more fun.
Be blonde.
It just feels like a full-time costume, and there's
yes.
And I mean that as a comp. Yeah. I loved it. It was like
you're always
I was
on,
like invincible.
Yeah,
you know, like whenever I have like people saying really weird, shady, like homophobic shit to me in sessions, which happens about at least once a month.
Still?
Oh yeah. Well, they don't even know they're being homophobic. Like they're just saying
they just
shit
don't
that's
know that you're
great.
Gay. Or?
Well, I mean, everyone knows that right. I'm gay. Not only am I very proudly feminine, but also, I'm like, you know, the biggest gay activist in the music business. Like,
so someone will say something without realizing it's actually kind of a shady thing.
Just like yesterday I was in a session and the guy, the producer was like, yeah, I'm in town with my family and like we rented an Airbnb and I didn't realize it was like in the heart of like WeHo. And it's just like, I don't know, it's kind of uncomfortable for my kids. Like they just have so many questions. Like why all there's all these men on
guess
the street.
Guess what? We all have so many answers that are very simple.
And I was like, okay, but when of course I was very polite and we wrote a great song and everything was great.
It's called Boys on the Boulevard.
Boys
it's coming out in 2 months.
Yeah, but it was in those moments when you're in those uncomfortable moments. I always wish I had full makeup on and platinum hair still because I feel like a superhero. And I'm like, let's discuss.
But he would have never then said it probably.
Well, I think he would have. He knows. We've worked together before. He knows that I'm, you know, very, very, very gay. So.
Tell me, you're gay?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to be clear. Well, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much, you guys. Yay!
Thank you.
So nice. You got a fetish for my love. I'll
push you out and you come right back. Thank you so much to Justin and Leland. It was so great speaking with you both. Really, like, the intention was not to keep them in the office for 45 minutes,
But we were having such a great time, and they were in no hurry to rush out the door. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to make this episode just a full episode with them and nothing else, because I didn't want to trim it down, really. So thank you again to Justin and Leland. It was wonderful. Yeah, that's all we got for this week. We'll have a normal episode with Jason and me next week. And until then, we're going to go out on one of Justin Tranter's biggest hits on the Hot 100 chart, Selena Gomez's Good For You. So we'll see you next time. Bye. 'Cause I just want to look good for you, uh-huh. I just want to look good for you.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.